I'll eat a slice of cheese for every follower I get.
Welcome to this month's episode of Smells Like Identity Hygiene, where we dive deep into modern identity security and access management practices. I'm your host, Katie. Today's episode is titled Identify Your Identities, Bob Smith is Not B. Smith. We're peeling back the layers to understand the crucial difference between a human and an account within your organization. It's not just about knowing who Bob Smith is in the break room. It's about understanding the real owner of the account, B. Smith, and the plethora of metadata tied to the account's true identity. As always, make sure you stick around until the end of the episode. We've got some hilarious outtakes that you won't want to miss. They're sure to give you a good laugh and a lighter note to end on after our deep dive into identity. So, let's get started and unravel the meaning of identities within your cybersecurity ecosystem. Welcome to Smells Like Identity Hygiene Live. I'm here with my co-host, Rosie, and we are so glad to welcome the Manager of Identity and Collaboration, Pat Buffalino, from Paramount today. Welcome, Pat. So glad to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thanks, Pat. Right. So I think we're really going to focus on identity today. Last month, we talked a lot about ownership. We talked about intelligent discovery in the podcast in January. But for today, our focus is going to center around identity. So the first question is, what exactly is an identity?
So the way I see an identity is it's the aggregation of all the accounts that make up a person. It's their roles and responsibility that make up that persona within an org. If you're in finance, for example, you may have your standard account. You may have an account dedicated to access an app, critical system, but it's really the culmination of all these accounts together that make up your true persona within that org.
A lot of people kind of define identities differently. It can just be a matter of dependent because it's so new. So what are some of the common misconceptions that you've come across as far as identities?
People not giving enough attention to the fact that there are multiple accounts that make up a person, and not properly correlating these accounts and letting these drift into the ether always naturally causes problem in the long run for an org, and not properly correlate types of accounts to a person is usually where I see big problems.
And it seems like a lot of people confuse an account with an identity. The idea of, well, this is my primary account, so this is who the identity is. Can you tell us why it's important to distinguish an individual account versus this is the human and this is the suite of accounts that that human has control over?
Yeah, let's say Microsoft 365 admin, right? I may have a standard account that I use and I access my email, my Office app, doing my day-to-day web browsing. And then I may have a secondary account that I use for elevated permissions. Obviously, we don't want these two to mix, right? And, you know, we're trying to keep tier zero stuff away from, like, tier two or what have you. And this is like, my admin account is one of my tools that I can use to do my job. And they don't cross each other. You know, I may access or check out my admin account with my primary account, but they have very distinct usernames, passwords, you know, second factors and things like that.
Identity is really becoming more of a growing topic of discussion. Some of these platforms that have never even used the term are starting to use it now. Why do you think that it's become so popular recently?
Oh, I mean, identity as of late, I mean, we all see it in the news. It's the perimeter to every org. It's the natural evolution of like what to attack next, right? Because it's very much like, you know, the firewall, you know, to get into, you know, critical apps or your SaaS platforms or what have you. And it just makes sense that these days that's the next attack vector, right? Usernames, passwords. We have these significant data states now in like the dark web of like dictionaries and, you know, of people's usernames and passwords and things like that. And it's just become too easy for threat actors to use these. And this is why we want to use like, you know, phish resistant factors and things like that to harden the perimeter, but also clean up, right? Reducing attack surface is huge. Having these like stale accounts out there available to be signed in like at the perimeter is dangerous. We want to avoid that.
If we think about the idea of, you know, the identity is not the account. And of course, we know in an organization who manages the accounts, I mean, it really depends on the organization, depends on the platform. But the identity as something almost independent of account, but obviously tightly tied to the account through ownership and through other means, who'd be responsible for that identity? Because traditionally, the organization within an organization that's responsible for like the humans is, you know, HR, for example, right? But here, when we're talking about it in the context of cybersecurity, when we're talking about it in the context of account ownership and that entry point into the environment, who do you think should be responsible for managing that identity, that human as the identity?
It's a very good question, because I can share from experience that, you know, HRIS may not want to manage every single type of account a human, you know, has access to, right? Because at the end of the day, HRIS is not going to know much about an admin account or a specific local user tied to SAP or what have you, right? And it's going to be very difficult for them. And, you know, if we have to do work where we want to tie accounts back to a human, it really comes down to who implemented those types of accounts. You know, let's take, for example, admin accounts, and specifically M365. Now, part of my job is not just identity, but also collaboration. And so managing Microsoft 365 is an area of that. And we institute a certain type of account to manage Microsoft 365. And all the attributes that are associated with those accounts are the required fields that should be filled out. And, you know, we'll map that account back to human account. Traditionally, we technically own those. But ideally, in some sort of centralized platform, you know, that user's manager would have visibility into all of the accounts, or, you know, there'd be some sort of centralized view. And this is the holy grail that everyone's trying to achieve, where you have a centralized view of all accounts tied to an identity, correlated back properly, and all with knowing what level of access each of these accounts have, and if they're elevated in certain, you know, applications and things like that. It's hard. It's a hard process.
Why is it? Why do you think it's why? Don't we have that central repository that says, look, regardless of where the account is, regardless of the platform, this is the keys to the house, right? This is the keys to the infrastructure. This is the entry point to the network. I mean, the very essence of security. Why do you think most organizations, and I know most organizations have this problem?
Yeah, there's just so many account types out there. I mean, they get created either by, you know, the need of the business and not thought about in their entirety. They're created at a point in time for a single purpose, and then they're forgotten about, or they're not created properly, where they have attributes that can correlate back to a primary account holder. And then it becomes the identities team job to try to figuring out who owns this account? Where does it belong? Is it orphaned? And so it is very difficult piecing these together. And I'll tell you one thing. In the last 2-3 years, I never thought my job would very much align with a data analyst, because I am cleaning data all the time now. This is, you know, I'm also a PowerShell scripter. So, you know, in terms of data, you can always code around things and do if else and try catches and code around bad data. But at the end of the day, the data is what kills you. So if an account doesn't have proper attributes tagged and filled out, or that's enforced, or even at the very core level, there's no policy or basic instruction set for someone at help desk or some admin to follow to create these types of accounts, it just gets to be very difficult.
You kind of said it too earlier, like this is the perimeter. So with all of these people having all of these touches across these accounts, all of these potential identities floating around, and literally even just within security teams, dozens of people could be trying to touch and solve for these problems. It's really caused an increase in these identity related breaches, because it just leaves opportunities for gaps. And so just thinking about recently with Change Healthcare, how not just the customer identities were exposed, the employees' identities were compromised, their data was released, and it exposed that company to a ton of risk and really flowed downstream to every company that has touches with that company. So how could they have prevented this, I guess, in the first place? But if they could or they couldn't, how can other companies be more proactive about protecting their customers and their employees?
Yeah, so I don't mean to throw a bunch of buzzwords, but I will say things like tax surface reduction and least privilege model and all of these things genuinely apply to these cases, right? if an account doesn't need to exist on the perimeter, if it's a service account, for example, and has nothing to do with your IDP or your collaboration platform, don't sync it there, right? Keep it to where it only needs to be. That's one. And two, reducing the using a model of least privilege. Not everyone needs to be global. If you manage users, you should have a user type role, right? And that role should be assigned to an account specific for that purpose, isolated from your daily driver, right? Your account that you're using to access email and the web. And doing these kinds of layers of protection where not syncing an account that doesn't need to go someplace, not assigning the kitchen sink of roles to them just because they need to manage a user, all of these things play a factor. And then, you know, obviously, phish resistant factors and things like that, moving away from SMS, are also, you know, they're all applicable here.
If you think about some organization that really hasn't started in their identity hygiene program to kind of clean all this up, like, in your opinion, where does one get started? Like, what's the first step? Because it seems so daunting, especially if it's a mid-sized company. Forget about a large enterprise that's made up of, you know, multiple acquisitions, but even a mid-sized company with a few thousand employees, where do they even start?
Yeah, it is a daunting. So there's two parts, and it's questionable which one you start with. But discovery, knowing what's out there, is a big deal, because you can't define policy on things you don't know, right? You have to know what's out there, and discovering where these accounts live and if they're local or domain joined or mastered in other IDPs or what have you. You need to know they exist first, and then you need to work on defining a policy that's backed by the organization. You can't just go as an admin on a whim and say, I'm going to set these attributes to these things, and these will correlate back to an identity, but you design that in a silo. That's not going to help anybody. A lot of these things require business buy-in, and it needs to be socialized and communicated. Everyone needs to be on the same page, right? If I define a standard for an admin account that ties back to my primary account, I need to make sure the help desk knows. I need to make sure the infrastructure teams know. I need to make sure anyone that has the possibility to create this type of account understands what these attributes are for and why we need them. And not just that, but there's also the layer of trust but verify. These things need to be, and probably the third step, which is, it's good to have a policy, it's good to have sign off, but then you need enforcement, right? And you need things that will go and prevent somebody from free form filling out, let's say, an attribute to whatever they want it to be, maybe make it so that they can only fill it out one way. And that one way is the policy way, right? There's lots of things you could do here. But yeah, that's probably where I would start, those key areas.
Yeah, absolutely. So say someone comes to you and just essentially, if you had to lay this out in, I don't know, there's a million steps, right? A million components within those steps and sub steps. But if you had to say, here are the key components that you need to focus on, and put it just really straightforward for someone who, like me, who doesn't always know everything about everything, I wouldn't tell my kids that, but what would you explain that to someone? Like, what key components of that cybersecurity strategy would you tell them to focus on when trying to protect their digital identities?
Yeah. So I definitely go through discovery, define a policy, define how you want your accounts to correlate back to an identity. It could be setting an attribute. It could be anything, right? There's lots of ways to do that. How you tackle it, or how you start to, you know, boil the ocean, if you will, in a cleanup type phase, is all going to depend on tooling and resources and things like that. It's going to be difficult, right? If you're in a large organization and you have thousands of accounts that have drifted outside of what you would want as a, you know, your defined policy, way of representing them, it's a Herculean task. It's very, very difficult, but you have to start somewhere. So hopefully that does justice to that question.
Yeah, that was great.
So Pat, you talked about buzzwords. I'm about to kind of make it really, really easy for you to use all sorts of buzzwords, and you will get 5 points for every buzzword you say. I will keep track. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit, and I can already picture some of the buzzwords you're going to use, because this is the kind of question that I get asked, and you can't help but use the buzzwords, right? So what do you see as the future and emerging trends when it comes to identity hygiene, when it comes to security and identity? What are the things that you see that people really need to start thinking about now that are coming in the horizon?
So when it comes to identities, I mean, I've said it for a plus. I don't want to let you down here. Now you've put me up on a pedestal of where what my buzzword knowledge is.
I have my pen. I'm keeping track.
So, I mean, top of mind for me, I mean, is more of this account cleanup and attack surface reduction, right? And also, I mean, phish-resistant factors. I know it's a little not so relevant to this conversation, but that to me personally, we all need to move away from SMS and anything that's knowledge-based. I mean, that's just me. Because I don't know if you've seen it, but like there's YouTube videos out there that make like man-in-the-middle type attacks on identity look like a paint by color. Like it's so easy now for anyone to stand up these frameworks. They're YouTube videos. I mean, my daughter in six years old could watch this video on her iPad and follow the steps. Like it's crazy. So companies have to do things. They have to take steps to secure their identities because it's just become so easy, right? For anyone. And yeah, they need to take action if they're not already. And hopefully they are, because this stuff takes time. It's not something you can implement overnight. It's going to take months, if not years. Sorry, no buzzwords.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were intentionally trying to avoid them, but I was expecting AI, cloud.
Oh, goodness.
Generative AI, ML. I almost had bingo, but I only got to.
No. So, no, I don't. I'm a big proponent of AI. I find it to be a great tool. It's getting there. It's purpose built right now. I love it for PowerShell, for example. GitHub Copilot is very cool. And it's just amazing at how it can read ahead and things like that. You know, everyone's trying to implement AI in every product, and there's some good applications of it. But at the end of the day, it needs to provide some value other than it just being tied to a product. I've seen a lot of ITDR platforms out there these days that will say we have AI, we have ML, but like, what is it actually providing? What benefit is it providing? So
right.
That's
are
why
you,
I'm not quick
checking
to use those
the box,
buffers.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you checking the box of saying you do AI, or are you using it in a meaningful way? But
exactly.
What about the reverse, right? What about the idea of AI being used to attack identities, and what companies have to be aware of? Because as it gets more and more sophisticated, we all, if you think about what was just released, where they, OpenAI can generate at least a minute or 2 minutes of video, where a year ago there was the Will Smith eating spaghetti video that was choppy, and everything was breaking up, where they redid that video just 12 months later, and now it actually looks legit. What about the dangers of AI? Not to protect an identity, but how are you going to protect those identities against an ever evolving and sophisticated AI that attackers could use?
Yeah, so along the lines of AI being a tool, I mean, what it is, what's happening, and you can apply this to developers as well. It's getting like junior level developers up to the area of implementing code and stuff that a senior developer would do. And what is this doing in its essence, right? It's becoming more available. It's making these technologically complex things more available to the masses. That's what AI is doing, right? You may have a threat actor that knew about XYZ or knew how to do this thing, but with AI and these sorts of tooling, they can now become so much more advanced just because they have a tool assisting them, right? And it's the same thing for good or for better or for worse. It makes this more accessible, which means there's more risk and, to like a threat actor, compromising an account or an organization, right? It's about accessibility, and it's definitely, it's a double-edged sword.
What are some things that we haven't asked you about? What do you want everybody to know about identities?
Yeah, I would love if everyone dropped SMS. as a factor, I'm going to say this more than just so many times. But it's amazing to me how easy it is to fish and man in the middle of these types of sign-on attempts. And you know, very compelling sign-on pages are, you know, it looks like Microsoft, it looks like Okta, it looks like whatever. And to an end user, people put too much blame on end users, saying that like they're the weakest link, and it's not really the case. I don't really believe that. I believe that it's up to the admins to implement things that protect the user with or without their action, right? You know, things like taking device context into play, where it's you're using public private keys to do some sort of authentication. And you know, what you're doing is you're increasing security. And a lot of times people think like, well, you're going to increase security, you're going to increase friction to the user. And that's not the case, right? You're trying to do both. You're trying to increase security, but then abstract a lot of the difficult stuff away from the user and just make it super easy for them. And this is where, like, I mean, I was following Okta's journey on passwordless, and you know, it's really compelling. It's really interesting. I would love to get to a point like that in anything, passwordless. And you know, Microsoft has a motto. It's they try to get people to MFA once a day, which is like so counterintuitive. You would think you'd want to MFA to every app, you know, as many times. But the goal for them is to MFA once a day, and the only time they MFA again is if your risk posture changes. If you've taken your laptop from your home to like Starbucks, or if you've taken, you know, if your laptop changed countries, you know, you're flying or whatever. And that's justifiable, right? Your risk posture has changed. So abstracting a lot of this from the end user, I you can't fault the end user. I'm sorry. They're gonna do what they're gonna do to get their job done, right? And you know, I think it's within our power as admins to do more and design better systems, you know, at the end of the day.
Definitely. Even if that means they got to buy 600 gift cards for their CEO who needs them immediately post haste. So,
Oh yeah. Oh goodness.
oh, this is the part of our segment. It's my personal favorite part. We've gotten some of our favorite phrases that we use, our buzzwords, the Sphere buzzwords, where we ask you a question and just to get to know you a little bit better, move away from the seriousness of breaches for just a little while. So
Sure.
the question today is, if you could choose and have any superpower possible, what superpower would you choose and why?
Wow, that's a good one. I feel like I'd love to read people's mind. It doesn't seem like it, but I'm an introvert and I just present well as like an extroverted person. And it's because of years of, you know, working the counter at my dad's pizzeria back.
Feel like I'd hurt my own feelings.
Like, you know what? I don't want to know what they think about me just now. So as long as you could turn it off, I think that's a really good superpower.
Yeah.
Selective hearing. I like that one. All right, Rosie, your turn.
You know, I keep going back between flight and super strength. And I keep thinking maybe the ability to fly, because I guess, I mean, not super strength, but I could probably get stronger just by working hard. But I obviously not super strength. And then I wonder, you know, what really are you going to do with super strength? You know, flying around just seems more fun, you know?
Classic.
I guess mine would be teleportation, but like time travel teleportation, where I could just go wherever I want at any point in time ever. So like even if I couldn't read their minds the right way and I said a thing that was dumb, I could just go back and just say something different the next.
Thanks for tuning in to explore the critical difference between people and their digital profiles and identify your identities. Bob Smith is not B. Smith. Don't miss our next episode, Control-Alt-Defeat, where we tackle asset types, controls, and violations, turning data into actionable insights and figuring out which violations to address first. Plus, mark your calendars for our March 21st webinar, where we dig deeper into identities and offer a live Q&A session. Before you go, enjoy a few laughs with our outtake segment.
There's like meat puppet people.
Insert VFX here.
It will gnaw into the crevices of your brain and it'll be stuck in your head forever.
Singing fish heads, Rosie.
How are you going to eat 40,000 slices of cheese?
We're worried about robots
like
taking over.
I can't am get so away sorry from it. About that.
No, you're not.
It's bread dropping to the beat of a song.
Country Katie.
Sandwich. Get a sandwich.
It's like, I am just the epitome of healthy eating.
Everyone's going, oh, wow, it's amazing. Your birthday's 3-3. You were born at 3 a.m. We're all talking about it. And then my mother goes, maybe. I don't remember.
That's it for today's episode of Smells Like Identity Hygiene. Hope you enjoyed the bloopers. Keep up with the latest episodes and get your exclusive access to our insightful webinars. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast. You'll find all the updates and the registration link for our monthly webinar episodes in this episode's summary. Stay informed and secure by joining our growing community.